LightSail 2 reaches 1 year in space this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. That's right, the Earth has made one full revolution around the Sun since the Society's little CubeSat with 32 square meters of Mylar sails rocketed into orbit aboard a roaring Falcon Heavy. We'll look back with Planetary Society Chief Operating Officer Jennifer Vaughn, and then get the mission status and outlook from LightSail Program Manager Bruce Betts and LightSail 2 Project Manager Dave Spencer. Dave also has some very special news about his own work that he'll share. Bruce will stay with us for this week's What's Up Trek Across the Night Sky and a new space trivia contest. My favorite image in the latest edition of the Downlink might be hard to decipher without a caption. Bunny-suited technicians are reaching up to a matrix of brass-colored cylinders. Over their heads is a complex piece of technology that would be unrecognizable to many, at least from this angle. What we're watching is members of the Perseverance Mars rover team installing sample tubes in the belly of the rover. Someday, those very tubes, filled with Martian soil, will be returned to the great labs back here on Earth, and the dream of Mars sample return will have been realized. NASA says Crew Dragon astronauts Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley are likely to make the International Space Station their home till at least August, and possibly longer. The extra hands are much appreciated by the other occupants. Bob and Doug might even get to help with some work outside the station. Suitable for framing, that's a huge mosaic image of asteroid Bennu's surface taken by NASA's OSIRIS-REx spacecraft last month. You can see the small crater called Osprey. It's a backup location for collection of a sample later this year. I swear the picture is so sharp you feel like you could reach in and pick up a sample or two yourself. And that's no more than a sample of what you'll find at planetary.org/downlink, where you can also subscribe to our great weekly newsletter for free. By the way, the June edition of my own monthly newsletter is now available at planetary.org/radionews. We weren't the first to set sail on the light of the sun. That honor goes to Japan and its Icaros solar sail, but we tried to be first with our Cosmos 1 craft. That episode was just one chapter in the Planetary Society's long-held dream, a dream that was finally realized last year with LightSail 2. We'll get into the details with Bruce Betts and Dave Spencer. First, though, I wanted to get the bigger picture from Chief Operating Officer Jennifer Vaughn. She joined me just a couple of days ago. Jennifer, welcome back to the show. Nobody is going to be surprised to hear that you and I and our colleagues and all of our members are pretty proud right now to be reaching this milestone. I know you feel that way.
I do, and so proud. And I know, above all, it's our members that they should be so proud that they came together and not only made this mission happen, but we have achieved our goals and we're still flying. We're still flying a year out. Hard to believe.
I'm seriously, did you suspect, I did not, that we would be at this point be going into an extended mission?
No, I certainly, when we put out the estimates in the very beginning, we thought that it could easily stay up for a year, but that wasn't part of our primary goals. We were out there to, one, get the first crowdfunded spacecraft up there and orbiting, and actually achieve those goals of controlling our orbit. How long it stayed up in orbit was really just a bonus, and those early estimates of saying it could be up for a year sounded like a very long time at that point. But now, it feels like yesterday that we were in Florida watching it launch.
And how? Gosh, I was just talking with somebody about that, how it does not feel like it's been a year since we heard and felt that Falcon Heavy take LightSail 2 up into orbit. You know, you talk about 10 years of developing LightSail, but I say, in fact, this is in my newsletter for this month that also comes out like this episode on the 17th of June. This really has been a long, hard road, and it stretches back to the beginning of the society, I guess, right? Because, I mean, at least two of our founders, maybe all three, sailing on the light of the sun was a dream that they shared.
Yes, and that was one of the things that they shared before the organization even existed. There was this connection with the concept of flying a solar sail out to Halley's Comet. And Lou Friedman had a central role in that mission design and concept. Bruce Murray was the head of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory at the time. And Carl Sagan was enamored with this idea of sailing on sunlight. So all three of them had this connection. And when the organization was formed in 1980, it was written into a lot of our very early documents that we as an organization were going to pursue the opportunity of solar sailing.
Right from the start and even before. Jennifer, I look forward to raising a glass with you on June 25th when LightSail 2 graduates into the next phase of its existence. Thank you for this. And I'm delighted to be able to share your thoughts and share this experience with you.
Well, thank you. We are so excited. Once again, this is just testament to the power of people coming together, rallying around a very big, audacious idea and making it happen. Everyone should be very proud.
Empowering the world citizens.
You got it.
That's Jennifer Vaughn. She is the Chief Operating Officer of the Planetary Society. We'll take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more about LightSail 2 as it completes 1 year in space. This is Planetary Radio.
Hi, this is Kate from the Planetary Society. How does space spark your creativity? We want to hear from you. Whether you make cosmic art, take photos through a telescope, write haikus about the planets, or invent space games for your family, really any creative activity that's space-related. We invite you to share it with us. You can add your work to our collection by emailing it to us at connect@planetary.org. That's connect@planetary.org. Thanks.
Hi, Emily Lakdawala here with big news from the Planetary Society. We're rolling out a new membership plan with great benefits and expanded levels of participation. At the Planetary Society, passionate space fans like you join forces to create missions, nurture new science and technology, advocate for space, and educate the world. Details are at planetary.org/membership. I'll see you around the solar system.
Welcome back to Planetary Radio. I'm Matt Kaplan. You know Bruce Betts as Chief Scientist for the Planetary Society and as my partner for the What's Up segment. You may also have heard his occasional updates on the LightSail 2 mission. He delivers those as the longtime LightSail Program Manager. You may not know Dave Spencer as well. Up until just days ago, Dave was an associate professor of aeronautics and astronautics in the Purdue University College of Engineering. He's also the founder and director of the Spaceflight Projects Lab at Purdue. Then there were the 17 years he spent at the Jet Propulsion Lab, including his service as mission manager for Mars Odyssey and Deep Impact, and as deputy project manager for the Phoenix Mars Lander. He even helped Pathfinder make it to the surface of the Red Planet back in 1997. Now he is about to return to JPL in a new and exciting position, one that we'll ask him about in a few minutes. But Dave has primarily joined Bruce and me to help us mark the first anniversary of LightSail 2 on orbit. We only have time here for a few clips from my conversation with the mission leaders. Our entire interview is in the online version of this week's episode. You'll find it and great links at planetary.org/radio. Gentlemen, congratulations. I did not think, as I said to Jennifer Vaughn, that we would, a year later, be talking about this transition into an extended mission for LightSail 2. And we have you and the rest of the team to thank, and obviously a great spacecraft and a lot of members of the Planetary Society. So again, congratulations and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
As we speak, where's that LightSail? Bruce?
It's flying somewhere between 24 degrees north and 24 degrees south. I'll check, Matt. I'll get you an answer in just a moment.
Why, you must be going to that handy dashboard at planetary.org.
Oh, yeah. I could have done that. I went to my more detailed program I used to plan imaging and things like that.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that you guys have something a great deal more detailed to tell you about where LightSail is, but also what it's up to. Dave, what is it up to? What is the current status of the spacecraft?
We're solar sailing just about every day. We turn the spacecraft twice in orbit so that we get a little boost from solar photons. And we're actively controlling the spacecraft on a daily basis. Every day, it takes a few hours to basically damp attitude rates and manage the momentum on the momentum wheel, which is used to reorient the spacecraft. We take a couple hours to despin the spacecraft, get the wheel speeds down, and then go back into solar sailing. And so that's been pretty much the routine for quite a while. And we've been addressing a number of different challenges and trying also to improve the solar sailing performance. Things are going well, and we're pretty much in the routine of solar sailing at this point.
So it's worked. Bruce, you've told us many times it did exactly what it was supposed to, raising its orbit. But it is also losing altitude, right? I mean, how much longer before LightSail just starts picking up too many molecules of air and not enough photons?
Well, it'll be at least many months. I don't know if Dave has more he wants to say about it. But the fundamental thing, as you note, Matt, is that even though we're in space and we're some 700 kilometers up in altitude, there's still molecules of air. And when you've got a little tiny, low mass spacecraft and a big sail area, you're getting atmospheric drag. And so we are gradually going down, and although we make adjustments to the orbit, and when we're solar sailing efficiently, we decrease how quickly we're going down, and even a few days have increased altitude. Generally, we're fighting a losing battle with the atmosphere and atmospheric drag. So it's a matter of time, but we've got time, and so we're trying to keep things going, learn more, take pretty pictures, and understand things.
And just about a year into operations, we've lost only 10 or 15 kilometers worth of altitude. And so The orbit's decaying very slowly. We do expect that decay rate to accelerate, but it's really difficult to tell because the atmosphere responds to solar events when the sun gets more active and throws off energetic particles. The atmosphere expands and atmospheric densities up where we're solar sailing get higher, and that increases the atmospheric drag. And so we can't really give a precise prediction about when we're going to deorbit, but we do expect the decay rate to pick up here in the next year.
I got into planetary science originally because I love the pictures going back to childhood. So to have a spacecraft and we're taking pictures that we are taking, the primary reason is for engineering, to look for variations in the spacecraft, originally to confirm the deployment of the sail. But we're also, we're the Planetary Society. We're about public interest and exciting the public about space, and seeing that big shiny sail with pictures of the Nile River in the background or Central Australia or the Himalayas, it just makes for exciting stuff. So yeah, I'm having fun.
From LightSail 1, we got one image down, and we were ecstatic to get that one image down, and we got lucky in having the sun centered in the field of view. But for LightSail 2, we've gotten dozens of really beautiful images down that have the Earth in the background. Bruce mentioned my favorite, which is one that shows the Nile River and the Red Sea. But it's really tough to pick a favorite because there are so many stunning images. So I encourage your members to go to the LightSail website and take a look at those images.
And Hal, yeah, if you haven't, folks, do it today. Don't do it right now, unless you want to think it'll enhance this conversation. My favorite, I think, has to be the one of looking up from Baja, California, toward my home, actually, in the San Diego area. And I'm sure I was out there waving at the time. Dave, I'm glad you mentioned drag sails, because that takes me into the future. What is the contribution of LightSail 2 for the future? Is this a technology that beyond Nia Scout seems to have promise, perhaps even, as I know you've talked about at times, Bruce, getting us to the stars someday?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've helped demonstrate that you can do solar sailing. You can do it in a smaller configuration. And there are a lot of potential applications of solar sailing. And the far-reaching one is getting us to the stars, because you can conceptually accelerate this with high-powered lasers. But there are a lot of near-term ones, like Nea Scout, using it to go to an asteroid. You can also, because you're not dependent on fuel, you can visit multiple asteroids. We can have missions that are in what would otherwise be unstable orbits, for example, solar monitoring missions that are closer to the sun than the stable L1 point of gravity balance. And so you get more warning for solar storms coming. I think that we're really at the infancy of this technology, and we've played a role in it, but it'll be great to see what happens going forward.
You mentioned drag sail technology. So drag sails are used to deorbit spacecraft or space objects at the end of their useful lifetime. Think about the satellite mega constellations that SpaceX and others are planning for global internet service. At the end of mission, you know, they're going to have to deorbit in order to keep that orbital region usable. Otherwise, if you have defunct satellites flying around, they pose a major hazard for collision. Drag sails are a technology that can be used to basically deploy at the end of mission and get those space objects out of orbit much more quickly than they would otherwise be able to deorbit. They can be used for launch vehicle upper stage deorbit as well as spacecraft. So at Purdue, we've got a couple of drag sail technologies that we're planning on flying, demonstration missions. And conceptually, they're very similar to light sail. They use the same sort of sail deployment technique, can use similar sail material. The difference is generally they're passive. Once you deploy the sail, you don't control them, unlike what we're doing on Light Sail 2, where we are actively controlling the attitude.
Hmm. Guys, this is just the beginning of a celebration. I look forward to joining the two of you and others, including our CEO, Bill Nye, the science guy, and even more folks, including Jennifer Vaughn, on the 25th of June, when we're going to have a little online video celebration on the actual anniversary of that launch of Light Sail 2 on the SpaceX Falcon Heavy. So I look forward to joining you there. It's a celebration. I think we've already opened it up, I think, to our members and supporters of the Light Sail project. Hopefully we'll have lots of space left over for other members of the public who are excited about this project, where they can join in too. All the details should be at planetary.org by the time anybody can hear this show. Thank you for this. Just one more thing, Dave, congratulations. You've got a new job. Tell us about what it means to be headed back to JPL.
Well, thank you, Matt. Yeah, I'm extremely excited about this. I've just recently accepted a position as the Mission System Manager for the Mars Sample Return Campaign. The Sample Return Campaign is actually just about to get going with the launch of the Mars 2020 rover next month. It's going to go out to Mars and land and cache samples, store samples in sample tubes for future return to Earth. And then in 2026, there'll be a lander and an orbiter, a European orbiter, that go out and retrieve those samples, bring them back into Mars orbit. And then that European orbiter is going to return it to Earth for a landing in Utah in 2031. So it's probably, in my opinion, it's the most ambitious planetary science undertaking that NASA or anyone has ever attempted. And I'm really excited to be a part of it. So as the mission system manager, I'm going to be working on mission design and navigation, mission operations, those sorts of things, similar in many ways to what I've been doing on Light Sail, but on a much larger scale with many more people involved. And so can't wait to get into it. And I've just recently started that position.
I have often called this on Planetary Radio the holy grail of robotic space exploration. There are, I don't know how many thousands of planetary scientists and others and just members of the public like me who are going to be hoping and praying that you're able to successfully pull this off. But I know it's a big challenge. Exciting, though.
Yeah, thank you. And from a planetary science standpoint, this has been the number one priority for the last couple of decades. And so, you know, from a science standpoint, the community is really looking forward to actually achieving this mission.
Bruce, before we go, anything else that you would want to add? Although you will be back with us in seconds for this week's What's Up.
I think it's appropriate to return back. As Dave mentioned, this is completely funded by individuals. So thank you. thank you to the 50,000 people from pretty much all over the world who contributed to make this mission a success. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks again very much. We'll continue to follow the mission, and I will see both of you on the 25th for that celebration on the one-year anniversary of LightSail 2's launch.
Thanks, Matt.
That was Dave Spencer, Associate Professor of Aeronautics and Astronautics in the Purdue University College of Engineering, but moving from that position to the one you just heard about, Mission System Manager for the Mars Sample Return Campaign at the Jet Propulsion Lab, not far from the headquarters of the Planetary Society. And, of course, he has been the Project Manager for LightSail, working with the Program Manager for LightSail. That's Bruce Betts, who's also the Chief Scientist for the Planetary Society, who joins us for What's Up. Welcome back.
I missed you so much, Matt. It's been so long.
I know. And I bet the stars have shifted in the sky since we last spoke.
Well, certainly LightSail moved. It's over Africa now.
Is it really? Wow. Boy, time flies. And so does LightSail. So what is up? What's up there above LightSail?
All sorts of things. But we're going to talk about the ones that are easy to see in the night sky. So that would be in the late evening. So now 10, 11 p.m. or after. Coming up in the east, we've got two planets, very bright Jupiter, and then to its left, dimmer but still bright, Saturn. And if you follow a line from Saturn to Jupiter, it'll lead you to the teapot asterism of Sagittarius. So it looks kind of like a teapot and forms part of the constellation Sagittarius. A couple hours later, if you're up later, we got Mars coming up. Mars is brightening. It is getting quite bright, and it will get brighter and brighter until October when it's at opposition. Pre-dawn, you can still see Mars nicely over then in the south or the southwest. And then low in the east, we got Venus coming up, getting higher and higher, super bright.
I'm a parsecs wide teapot, short and stout.
Oh, God, I just had this terrible image of you doing the dance, like, in the sky. Oh, that's going to haunt me.
Had to do that once in high school. I will save that story for another time.
Oh, I look forward to it. On to this week in space history. It was 1983 that Sally Ride became the first American woman in space. In 2009, Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, as well as the Impactor LCROSS, both launched, and LCROSS did its thing, slamming into the moon, and LRO still doing good stuff at the moon. On we go to and
space. I don't know, made me think of David Byrne for some reason.
Same as it ever was. all right, so astronauts. This is an interesting little tidbit. Astronauts often experience a lessened sense of taste in space. So they often request spicy food or spicy condiments, for example, on the space station for long stays in space.
I remember reading that. The sriracha sauce is pretty popular, if I remember correctly.
That's actually what one of the S's stands for, ISS.
I think sriracha sauce actually probably originates from somewhere in space. That's my.
If they're aliens, they're definitely involved in the creation of that. All right.
Take us to your sauce. Yeah.
We try to move on to the trivia contest. Before Crew Dragon Demo 2. What was the last two-person orbital space flight launched from the United States? That was your question. How'd we do, Matt?
You really have frustrated a lot of people who entered the contest with this one.
It's my goal in life.
All right, so here's what we heard along this line of frustration from Mel Powell in California. Bruce was trying to trick us into guessing Gemini 12 with Jim Lovell and Buzz Aldrin. Wasn't he? Don't even bother making him admit it. It's all so clear to us now. Can't take that guy anywhere. Can you, Matt?
I didn't do it. I wasn't trying to fool you.
Here's our poem from Dave Fairchild, the poet laureate. Prior to SpaceX in May 2020, you have to go back to the 80s or more. That's when Columbia lifted for NASA a flight that was called STS number 4. It left the launching pad in June of 82, Mattingly Harsfield safely on board. Prior to that, it was Gemini 12 that had two crew aboard her, as records record. I'm not sure, that last line may not scan perfectly, but is that right?
STS-4 Columbia is correct in 82. I also will note that STS-1, 2, and 3 also had two-person crews as they were test runs for the space shuttle before they loaded them up with more people.
Here's our winner, Perry Metzger. Perry Metzger, longtime listener in New York, New York. The town's so great they named it twice. Who is it that says that? Anyway, Perry, he's a previous winner, but it has been over 3 years since he hit the jackpot. Perry, congratulations. You are the winner of that celestial buddy, Little Earth, our earthy plush toy, just like the one that is now up on the International Space Station. And it's going to be brought home by Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley when they climb back in the Crew Dragon. They're going to bring Little Earth along with them. And I imagine it's going to end up in the Smithsonian. Well, yours won't go in the Smithsonian. It'll go to your house, Perry. So again, congratulations.
All right, we move on. Now, this question, you got to stick with me. It's definitely different, a little weird, but it takes you down an interesting rabbit hole if you follow through with finding the answer. So here we go. An ancient Greek analog computer used to predict planetary motions was retrieved from the sea in 1901. It dates from somewhere between 87 BCE and 205 BCE. Here's your question. What is this relic called? Go to planetary.org/radio contest.
If I have a favorite computer in the entire history of Earth, this is it. I love this story so much. I want to go to, I forget what museum it is, where they've actually rebuilt it, you know, based on all the x-rays they've done. And analysis, and it's this anachronistic piece of technology that has no business existing 200 years BCE, but there it is. Anyway.
And they found evidence of sriracha on it.
Yeah, and our friend Kim Stanley Robinson, the great writer, he wrote it into his story. I think it's in Galileo's Dream, that book of Kim Stanley Robinson. Enough of that. You've got until the 24th. That'll be June 24th at 8 a.m. Pacific time to get us this answer and win yourself an ancient Greek computing device. No, I'm sorry. You'll have to settle for a rubber asteroid. We're done.
An ancient Greek rubber asteroid. All right, everybody, go out there, look up the night sky, and think if you were to put one thing in your house in the Smithsonian, what would it be? Thank you, and good night.
I would want to put two things in the Smithsonian, your microphone and my microphone, because they're of such great historic value, and also there are people who'd be very happy to hear that we no longer have microphones.
We'd get more.
Okay, he's Bruce. He's the chief scientist of the Planetary Society. You knew that. And he joins us every week for What's Up, and you knew that too. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by its light sailing members. Mark Hilverit is our associate producer. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which is arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. Stay safe and well. Ad Astra.